and welcome to the Nurses for Healthy Environments podcast. My name is Beth Schenk, a registered nurse in Missoula, Montana, and hosting today's podcast. Today, our guest is Charlene Winters, professor of nursing at Montana State University. Good morning, Charlie. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well, Beth. Thank you.
You bet. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself. You've been in nursing education for a while and have been a prominent leader in the state. Tell us about your role in nursing.
Well, Beth, I've been a nurse for quite a few years and began teaching in the late, mid-80s at Montana State University. And for the last several years, I have taught in our Doctorate of Nursing Practice program, teaching nurse practitioners to practice both family and psych mental health nursing in rural populations.
Great. And you've also been a leader in environmental health and have been involved in some major studies. How did you get started doing that? And tell us a little bit about your experiences.
Well, my research interest began really as a critical care nurse years and years ago when I worked as a staff nurse. I was quite curious about how patients responded to illness and injury and how they adapted to those injuries. And as I went on for my master's and my doctorate, I continued to think about adaptation and response to illness. So my research started looking at that, particularly focusing on persons living in rural environments that had chronic illness and how they self-managed those chronic illnesses and how they adapted to having a chronic illness, particularly in low healthcare resource environments that we have in rural communities. And at one point, MSU College of Nursing had a Center for Research on Chronic Health Conditions in Rural Dwellers funded by the National Institute of Nursing Research. And while I was associate director of that that center and working with researchers that we were funding, I got a call from people from Libby, Montana, who were in practice up there at the Center for Asbestos-Related Diseases. And they were curious about how we might work together to better understand their patients and their patients' responses to illness. And that's how my focus narrowed really to looking at the environmental health impact of asbestos and how persons respond when they are exposed.
Interesting. So that tied together your doctoral work with this available and very big, available study and very big environmental health problem. What sort of research questions were you asking and were the folks you were helping support asking?
Well, the clinic there is a specialty clinic that works with persons who are exposed either as workers who were working in the vermiculite mine there close to Libby, or their family members. And they asked us to help them look at the data that they were collecting. They were using the St. George Respiratory Quality of Life questionnaire and some other questionnaires to explore their patients' psychosocial health status. So we began to work with them and developed a study to look at the psychosocial health status of persons exposed to amphibolous asbestos. In that community, a vermiculite mine, it was about just a few miles outside of town, and vermiculite it was used extensively for insulation, building insulation, also as a fire retardant. It's also used to as an additive to soil to make soil a little bit better. And from Libby, Montana, a small rural town of about under 3,000 people, that mine shipped vermiculite across the world. There were more than 200 plants in the United States that it went to. And unfortunately, this vermiculite was contaminated with naturally occurring amphibolous asbestos. And amphibolous asbestos is associated with respiratory disease, respiratory cancers, and cancers elsewhere in the body. So the community workers, those people who were involved in the mine activities and also then the distribution plant there in Libby, of course, were exposed to this dust from asbestos, and they brought that dust home to their family members. So it was we think, if not the largest, one of the largest environmental disasters in the U.S. in terms of it being a community-wide event that both workers and non-workers were exposed to this amphibole dust. So our first study was to look at their psychosocial health status and their respiratory status. And that study was funded by HRSA, the Office of Rural Health Research. And following that study, we had another study funded by the National Institute of Nursing Research to look at rural persons' engagement in research. And so both of those studies helped us to better understand not only the exposure, the effects of exposure, but also the impact that that exposure and the impact that a lot of research had on the small community. Because as you could probably understand, given the small community size, but the large impact it had through its distribution of this contaminated material, there's a lot of interest and a lot of research going on in the community. So we were very interested in those two things. How were people responding to exposure, and how were they responding to research, and how would they respond to being asked to participate in research?
Did you find that people were interested and willing in the research? I know they were probably overwhelmed by the whole experience, plus the EPA cleanup, plus, you know, the real health threats. Did you find that they were responsive to participating in research?
They were. We found that it was a heavily researched community, like I said. And when we looked at their participation or willingness to participate in research, we found a few things to be true. One, that whenever there is a technological disaster like this, you know, there was a mining company involved, there was the EPA involved, and it took years for the EPA to come in, and then years later before an environmental health disaster was recognized for the community, the first one in the United States, actually, under that the law that allows the government to do that. So there was this long time span of people being exposed, you know, the mine owners and community residents not understanding the exposure. There were some mistrust that developed. So this event and all the different, you know, political, economic, and social things that were going on during the time of the event and the exposure being recognized and then something being done about it led to some mistrust. And there was, of course, different factions, people who didn't believe it was a problem, others who believed asbestos was a problem. You know, you had community businesses that were concerned about the economic impact of focusing on asbestos. So all of those things that happen in a community whenever there is some kind of environmental event like this. So there was some skepticism, there was distrust, there was some stigma attached to being ill. You know, people, particularly rural people, are very self-sufficient. They're very independent. They like to take care of themselves. They don't like to rely on other people. And there was a bit of stigma associated with being ill. Because it was also a community event, there are generations of people there that are affected. Grandparents, parents, children, grandchildren that are affected and have respiratory illness now because of this, either exposed because you were a worker or because you were a community member, just someone living in the town. So in order to work with a community like this and have them engage in research, there really needs to be a development of trust. There needs to be honest, clear communication, education about what you're doing. And we've also found it was very important to have a connection with the community. So you aren't just walking in and saying, hey, I'm a researcher and I'd like to know what you think about something. You know, you had to have established some kind of relationship there on the ground. And so having research partners, and in our case, it was our clinical partners from Libby that helped us with that. The other thing that we found is they listen and pay attention to local communication. So the local newspaper, a newsletter that would come out from the clinic there in town, and those kinds of things, the, you know, the local radio station, those were the ways that they got information. And so it's important to pay attention to that if you're wanting to engage folks. But by and large, they were interested in being engaged in your research if they felt it was meaningful, if they thought it would help them or their family, if it would improve health, their own family's health, or the health of the community.
Interesting. It's such a complicated and laden experience because, as you say, so many generations involved and a lot of emotion. I would think that the nursing role was particularly important here, not only because of nurses' education and ability to tie together these different points of view, different elements such as financial, health, generational, comfort zone, etc., and also the trusted nature of nurses. Did you find that your nursing background was particularly important? And I also realized it was partly funded by a nursing agency, NINR. But how would you say your nursing role contributed?
I think it played a major role, as you said, Beth. You know, nurses are seen as people who can be trusted, well respected, and we were aware of that. And we always introduced ourselves as nurses, that we are nurses, we are nurse researchers, we are nursing faculty, you know, that we were interested in working, learning from them and working with them in order to better understand the situation that they found themselves in. So I think that was critical. And our connection, our clinical partners, you know, included a social worker, a nurse, and a physician. And they were known people to the community. So I think we pulled on, kind of came at this from two directions. One, these were trusted, by and large, trusted healthcare providers in the community. And the outsiders, you know, us coming in from the outside, were nurses. And I think people can relate easily with nurses and understand what nurses are about. And so I think that really did help.
I'm sure it did. And also nurses have been leaders in community participatory type approaches and methodologies for research.
Yes.
And that has really grown, I would say, since those years you were there. Now, let's think about that a moment, because this, if people don't know about the Libby, Montana case, it's, as you say, one of the biggest and most prominent cases of environmental health issues in our country, a large Superfund site that took years to identify, mitigate, and recover from. And one question I'd like to ask you is, how is the community doing now? But what I want to know first is how many years of your career were spent working on that?
I think we started working with the CARD Clinic, the Center for Asbestos-Related Disease, in 2004. And we continue to work with them to this day. Now, our research has shifted a little bit outside of Libby to another site that we're focusing on now. But some of my research partners are still very actively involved with Libby and with research going on there, particularly with animal models and some other things to better understand the physical effects of this kind of asbestos exposure. It seems to be a little bit different than other types of asbestos exposure in that it's more pleural abnormalities than interstitial lung abnormalities. And of course, asbestos-related disease takes 10 plus years to even show up. Some people report up to 30 or 40 years for symptoms to show. So there's a lot of knowledge still to be gained by working with this community.
Yeah, very interesting and really important work. So you mentioned that you're working in another site. What are you up to?
Well, we have still working with folks from the CARD Clinic and research team members from three universities. We're looking at naturally occurring asbestos outside of Las Vegas in Nevada. On our team are medical geologists who have found fibers consistent with asbestos that are in the desert. And these are an area where it's a lot of recreation takes place, horseback riding, ORV, you know, vehicle, off-road vehicle riding, hiking, camping, etc. And so we were quite interested in looking at the level of exposure, how much dust comes up from the desert when people are out there recreating, and what is that level that they're being exposed to in terms of their breathing zone level. So we're working with a team of researchers from MSU, from Montana Tech, which is also in Montana, from the University of Montana, and also University of Nevada, Las Vegas, to look at this exposure. And the other piece to this research is to look at the environmental health literacy of the community members. This is this research is looking at these things using a community-based participatory research approach. And so we have connected with local residents, asked them what their concerns were, what are they doing in the desert? You know, do they have any concerns about the dust that's there? What do they know about the naturally occurring asbestos that's been identified there? And by those conversations, we've developed this this research plan, which is to look at the environmental health literacy, to look at their ability to participate in community-based participatory research and be partners in research. Hopefully we'll expand their knowledge about exposure and prevention of exposure. And then, like I said, get some specific numbers on what the level of exposure is in this area. So that research is currently being reviewed at NIH, and we hope to hear soon if we will be funded.
Terrific. That sounds really interesting. And a different form, is this correct? A different form of asbestos, so a little bit different impact on the lung tissue. Is that right?
Well, it's very, very similar to the Libby amphibole asbestos. Yeah.
Interesting. So tell me a bit about how you have integrated this, you know, really terrific body of research into your faculty role and working with students and, you know, undergrad and graduate students.
Well, that's a really interesting question, because we're very interested and engaged in community-based participatory research, and it seems to fit to then engage students in research. And of course, faculty are always wanting to work with students and engage them in what they're doing. And so over the years that we've been doing this kind of work, we've had students either work with us as an independent study and help us with data collection or data analysis. We've had as undergraduates, and then we've had a graduate student, for example, work with us, and she took the EPA meeting minutes from Libby, Montana for several years and analyzed them to look at research communication and engagement. So she did her master's thesis on that. And I think, you know, whenever we can, we try to find a student who would be interested in working with us and then bring them on. With this research that will take place in Nevada, if we're funded, there will be graduate students working with our research team in data collection out there on the site, and we're looking forward to that. One thing that we've done as well when we were working in Libby and doing the two studies in Libby is we engaged with the local high school. The teacher, the science teacher there, has been engaged with researchers in the past, and he was teaching an elective research course at the high school level. And so whenever he could, he would engage with researchers so that those students could get real life experience doing research. And so we worked with him, and it was so much fun. Over a period of a year, we worked with the students for them to understand the whole research process, from idea generation through the IRB process and the whole, you know, the whole nine yards of doing a study. They all completed human subjects training. They helped us develop the surveys that we were using to survey community members. And then they actually worked with us to collect the data out there in the field doing surveys. And then we followed up with our analysis and brought it back to them and had them help us look at what the results meant. So it was a wonderful experience for us. And I think it made a difference for that teacher, that faculty member, but also for his students.
Yeah, that's so terrific to get. Not only do you as researchers get meaningful help, but it's just such a great exposure for students at all levels to see how this really works, because it's complex and no answers are easy.
No, they're not.
This is a question I ask a lot of folks on the podcast, and it seems very obvious that environmental health is related to nursing. But if you were going to try and explain that, like your elevator speech of why it matters, or to an introductory nursing class, how would you link why environmental health is an important nursing issue?
I don't think there's anything about the environment that doesn't touch us in terms of our health. And as nurses, of course, we're all about, you know, helping people be as well as they can be and live as healthy a life as they can be. And in every aspect of working with patients, nurses have an opportunity to talk with them about their environment, the environment that they live in, whether it's a household dust, whether it's, you know, here in Montana, you have mice and other kinds of rodents that you might be exposed to when you're out working in the field or in the barn or what have you. There's pesticides and there's other things and products that you use in agriculture that can be very harmful. So because we interact as nurses with people in so many areas, either in a hospital or a clinic, or when you're out in the community as a family member and you're volunteering your time or something at a school, people look to you to have information that around their health, and it provides us an opportunity to touch base with them about even the simplest things that they could do to improve their ability to stay well, to stay healthy. So I think in our role as a professional and a provider, we can talk about the environment. But in our role as a nurse using these contaminants, drugs and whatnot, we have a voice. And we can always bring up at least the idea of, let's see what's in this product that we're using and how it might affect not only us personally as nurses, but our patients and the greater environment. As a nursing faculty member, we could do a better job of bringing up the environment, environmental health, and the effect of the environment as we go through the curriculum. And it can be overt and covert. I mean, it can be explicit, where you have, you know, lectures and lesson plans and learning activities around the environment. But it can also be just woven in whenever you're talking about something, say in the pharmacology class, you can talk about safe handling of drugs and those kinds of things. So I think nurses play a keen role in raising awareness about environment and environmental health. And going back to that whole notion of nurses being trusted, you certainly have an opportunity when working with the public.
That's great. Thank you. That was really well said. Do you find that when you're working with students, not in a research study, but in your classes or with other faculty, that this makes sense to them?
I think it does, and particularly with younger students, that they seem to be more aware of the environment and have an appreciation of it in terms of asking questions about clean air, clean water, you know, and those kinds of things than, say, I might have been, you know, when I was their age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of the issues are more in our face right now, aren't they?
They are.
I also wanted to ask you, I know that you've served as the president of WIN, which is the Western Institute of Nursing, for this past year, and thank you for that work that you've donated. And you and I have worked a couple times on environmental health conversations there. So I was just thinking, from your vantage point of having been a leader of WIN, what suggestions or ideas do you have about engaging nurses across the West in terms of environmental health?
Well, that's really a good question. I know that there are several nurses and people engaged with WIN that are very interested in this topic and have expressed an interest in working together. So I think one thing to do is to just bring it out and say, we have this group of people that are interested in talking about this and forming a special interest group around that so that when we have conferences, we can meet. Get together and talk about what each other is doing and perhaps do some collaborative work on the topic. The other is to be proactive in putting out when the call for abstracts comes out for presentations, is to submit an abstract, have a poster or a paper presentation, and to then continue to try to work collaboratively so that we can look beyond ourselves and our own institution, and where we are, and work together in order to do something that's a little bit more effective for the West. I know at the last conference when we got together and chatted, we started thinking about, is there a topic that, one particular area that we'd like to focus on and just get going? And it can be something very, very small or something quite big, but at least identifying something and just taking that first step.
That's great advice, and I agree with you. There's a number of people who are really interested right now, and a lot of interest and not so much bandwidth, I guess. But I think to get tangible is a good idea, as you suggest, to think about a project, think about focusing on more abstracts. So I can help with that actually a little
Yeah.
bit. So
Another
yeah.
thing, Beth, is for each of us just to have it in our forefront. So, as part of my role as WIN president, I was also the representative of WIN to the Council for the Advancement of Nursing Science, CANS, to the Leadership Council. And CANS is the sponsor of the State of the Science Conference. That's every other year in Washington, D.C. And also, they sponsor an Advanced Methods Research Conference every year. And so, when we were talking about a future State of the Science conference, one of the things I did was recommend environmental health as being kind of the focus of that, or the Advanced Methods Conference being, having environmental health as a focus, and making it broad enough so that you would bring in and attract many, many people. And you could look at the environment in so many ways. So we were using it as a broad term so that many, many researchers could find a way for their research to fit. And I think that's one thing that we all can do is when the opportunity comes up, is to raise that as an idea or a thought or a suggestion so that it's not dormant, but an active body, if you will.
Yeah, no, that's a great idea. I know some colleagues of mine from Kentucky and New York got together to do a pre-conference at their regional meeting. And it was research based on research methods for environmental health. So we could pair with them as we try and advance that nationally.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Terrific. Well, boy, thanks. Thank you so much, Charlie. I've already taken a good chunk of your time. Is there anything else you'd like to add today?
Only that I appreciate you asking me to chat with you. I'm so impressed with the work that you do across the West with Providence Health and with Washington State University. So it's really a pleasure to be here and talking with you.
Well, thanks very much, Charlie. And right back at you. You're a respected researcher and faculty member and all around great person. So it's been a real pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening today to the Nurses for Healthy Environments podcast. Check us out at environ.org. That's ENVIRN. And please leave a review for us wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks a lot and talk to you next time.